Hello and welcome to the 12th episode of the Reinvent podcast. Today I'm chatting with Bruce Cohen, owner of Absolute Organics. I've been promoting Absolute Organics' range of products to clients for many years and have always had great results incorporating their protein powders, oils and food supplements into my recipes and meal plans. I'm a bit of a skeptic, having been in the food and nutrition industry for so long that it was simply fortuitous to have connected with Bruce on LinkedIn after he posted information on a couple of his new product lines. I'm so happy to have had this chat and found out how fussy he is when it comes to sourcing and manufacturing a wide range of health foods and supplements for the South African market. Bruce shares his passion for the industry, years of experience, and a magic breakfast smoothie recipe that will keep you switched on for hours. The audio quality isn't perfect as we recorded remotely during the COVID-19 lockdown period, but please enjoy.
I really just stumbled into this industry about 15 years ago because I come out of the media industry. I spent most of my life as a journalist. When I was sort of dislodged from my media career, I wasn't willingly dislodged. I was sort of forced out of it. I had to sort of like reinvent myself. So I really didn't know what I was going to do. And then I really can't draw any sort of connection to it. I stumbled on a little business that was selling organic hemp seed oil. And this just captured my attention. And I thought, I'd like to get involved because I thought hemp was going to be one of those really, really interesting products of the future. There was a lot of good history behind hemp. It's a very versatile product, as you know. It's from a fiber point of view, from a medicinal point of view, from an oil point of view. There's just so many things that circulate around hemp. So I bought this little business for an absolute song. And then I quickly discovered that my interest in hemp wasn't mirrored by most other people's interest in hemp. And I had to start doing something more interesting than that was more in tune with what the market wanted. And that's really where I started getting involved in different kinds of products. Specializing initially in cold pressed omega oils. We initially imported them, but then I bought my own oil presses and we started pressing our own oils. And I sort of kept that going all the time. And it's not a huge part of the business today, but it's something that I'm really quite passionate about, is this genuine cold pressing of omega-3 oil. So we do flax and chia, and we create omega-3 blends, and we do some interesting stuff with omegas. I think it's one of our strong points, if not one of the most important parts of the business.
Yes, you know, omegas are tricky because of temperature control and the risk of your raw material going rancid. So it's quite a process to get that right. I remember your brown bottles in the fridge at Fruits and Roots from years ago.
That's exactly what it was. So we did a flax oil blend, we did an omega-369 blend, we did a omega sport blend. We've stayed with those oils and we still sell them through the health shop network. But it really is about very, very careful looking after of the raw material.
Yes.
Because, you know, as you say, heat and light oxidize omega-3s very, very quickly.
Yes.
So unless you know what you're doing, best not to take them.
What I really wanted to gain from this chat today is to help people understand what to look for when they want to supplement, because it is so confusing for so many people. They go into a big pharmacy chain, they're overwhelmed, they don't know where to start. And, you know, knowing that or trusting in your product and your brand and knowing what to buy is so important, because, you know, there's a lot of talk about supplements being expensive urine, which is true if you're buying mass-produced products that are not well-made and you don't understand what's going on the label. So let's go back and chat about how you choose your raw materials, how you process products, how carefully you almost audit, you know, what you get in to make sure that the end user is getting a really good product at the end of the day.
It's not an easy question to answer, because there are lots of factors involved. Mm. You know, a big thing is trust. The wine industry has a lovely term, a word that they use a lot. It's provenance. Is that you really have to understand the story behind the product. And that story means it's the person who made it, it's the temperature at which the product, at which the grapes were grown, it's the microclimate, the you know, whether the fertilizers were used, all the stuff that goes into the making of the product is really, really important. But it's, of course, it becomes incredibly complicated when your supply chains are global.
Yes.
Getting to know your suppliers individually is almost, you know, it's almost impossible today. You have to try really hard to do that. So provenance is really important, and unfortunately there's no quick fix to that because so much of our product on the shelf today is built around marketing and rather than the sort of product intrinsics that go in. So getting to know, and so trusting brands, trusted brands are important, and building trust takes time. And trust can evaporate very, very quickly. The one thing that I have done right from the beginning is I started with organic hemp seed oil. And I've maintained our organic certification nonstop for 15 years. So every year we have a full organic certified certification audit. It's an international audit, a crowd called BCS out of Germany. They've monitored us for the last 15 years in terms of supply chain. For the organic ranges, because we don't only do organic. I mean, we do natural and organic. I think the organic market is still quite small, although it is growing. Certainly on the organic side. So when I cold press organic flaxseed oil, you can be sure that the seed is certified organic. We don't make organic claims unless the product is a certified organic claim, because lots of people make all sorts of claims about organic. And there's basically no regulation.
Yes, there isn't.
Or there's no enforcement. There's no checking. So that's why I rely on international agencies to do organic certification crowds, like as I mentioned, BCS or EcoCert. There are several. So I think that's an important thing when it comes to key ingredients, that organic is a good starting point, because what it's doing, it's giving you an independent verification that the product is clean. And in a polluted world, clean is a good start. And then not only do they monitor the ingredients, but they also look, I mean, the main thing about organic certification is to prevent adulteration, because organic allows you to charge a premium. So if you can take, say, for example, chia seeds, and you can mix organic with non-organic and then charge an organic price for it, that level of adulteration is very difficult to detect, because you can't tell the difference. Yeah. You know, the one seed looks exactly the same as the other. So the only way to really keep a check on it is to have these independent audits where they not only look at the quality of the product and look at what you're doing and how you're doing it, but they chase down the paper to see all the documentation and to see that it all matches and that what came in organic left organic. So you didn't produce more than what came in, you know, all this kind of stuff. And it's a really important check. So for people who want some sort of peace of mind about quality, that third party organic inspection is really one of the few verifications that are available.
You know, and I guess especially in South Africa, where we don't know and there's no policing of these things, this is really assuring to know that at least, you know, you can trust somebody to put these standards in place and to feel that they're as important as maybe the consumer does when they're looking for an organic product. What I'm finding is absolutely remarkable is you had an almost psychic-like ability to see where hemp was going. And this is years ago, before it became a craze. I picked up your message on LinkedIn about the camel milk, which prompted me to contact you. Let's chat about how you forecast what's going to pop up onto the horizon.
I go every year, or every second year, I suppose, over the last, to Biofach in Germany. Mm-hmm. Biofach is Europe's largest organic show, you can pick up a lot of pointers there. I haven't done the American shows, the Expo Wests, the Expo Easts, and that kind of thing. I just think the American sort of story is not a great story for us. I prefer the European tradition. Around supplements, food, and stuff like that. So it's not difficult to see what's coming. But what I'm interested in is picking up on these ideas and then seeing how I can localize them, because I'm really sick and tired of importing products. If we can produce locally and approximate some of these important trends, then I really get excited about it. All right, we do import, and I mean, there's lots of ingredients we still bring in, and some products we still bring in. But I'm much more interested in the local in local production, because again, it's the provenance. Mm. You know, you can, and the camel milk story is rather a nice story, because it was just me stumbling upon a small processor in Cape Town who was able to produce colostrum. We've been selling colostrum for a long time, colostrum powder. And I think colostrum powder is a really, really powerful food. It's just really, really rich in all sorts of good things, but particularly immune-boosting products, immune-boosting proteins, which right now is very, very topical. We were importing colostrum from America from a company called APS, which is the largest producer of colostrum in the world, which doesn't exactly give you a great feeling. You know what I mean? In this kind of industry, large is not necessarily, is by no means good, yeah. Or doesn't have to be good. I'm not saying that they're bad. It was a good product. But again, it was just this mass production of colostrum. And I found this small processor in Cape Town who was doing goat's milk, but also had access to colostrum and was able to produce in small batches a high quality colostrum powder. So we switched across. And in our conversations, I discovered that he was producing very small batches of camel milk for a farmer by the name of Hans Knussen, who happens to have this farm in the middle of absolutely nowhere. It's about 400 kilometers north of Uppington, right in the middle of the Kalahari. Yeah. And it's a family farm that they've had for over 100 years. And they happen to have inherited a herd of camels that the British left behind after the Second World War. The army was involved in taking on the Germans in Namibia at the time. And there was, I'm not altogether sure of the story, but anyway, a herd of camels was left behind and these farmers knew nothing what to do with them. So the camels just roamed freely for decades. And then the farming got tougher and then they tried different ideas around camels and then the milk story came up. And so camel milk is not easy to produce. You know, camel gestates for like 13 months. Yes. And their production is not that high. But Hans has got about 80 camels in the Kalahari, and he produces the milk, and he's shipping it down to Cape Town now for us. We pasteurize it. It's a pasteurized product, not a raw product. But once you go to milk powders, you really have to pasteurize because yes. You're looking for shelf, you know, for a longer shelf. And then it's evaporated or spray dried, nothing added, completely clean. So I was fascinated by this because I just think, we're in the business of distributing some of these plant-based milks and that. I look at these products and I think they are absolutely nutritionless. From a camel, in other words, while it's just producing milk, carries a very, very rich array of these immunoglobulins that are immune boosting. So it's basically colostrum. It has the same powers, the same nutrients that colostrum has in it, but it's just the normal milk. And unfortunately, because we could only get it in small quantities, it's expensive. It's got to be moved 2,500 kilometers to Cape Town. This takes time and takes money, and it's expensive. In trying to bring the price down a bit and make it more affordable, and just let me note that this is a brand new product that's only going to market this month. Yes. It'll only start trickling into the market. I came up with an idea of producing what we call a desert milk. And a desert milk is a 50-50 blend of camel. So the goats hang out in the in Lambert's Bay area, which is semi-desert, and the camels hang out in the Kalahari. So I thought it was a legitimate claim to call it desert milk.
It's almost uniquely South African. It's brilliant.
Well, I think it is. I've never seen a product like this out there. And by goat's milk is nowhere near as expensive as camel's milk. So by 50-50 blending it, we bring the price down quite significantly. But again, it's still not a cheap product. But it's not your normal milk. You know what I mean? This is superfood milk.
Yeah.
It's special and not for everybody. I mean, the camel milk taste is absolutely fabulous. It's rich and naturally sweet. Whereas, goat's milk has its own peculiar sort of flavor to it, which I quite like, actually. I'm used to. And blending it down with a camel milk kind of softens the sort of the rougher tones of the...
I'm a big fan of protein. I have been recommending whey protein for years. And I was looking today at the nutritional profile of the camel milk. And it's probably even better for you from an immuno perspective and an amino acid profile than whey. I think it's absolutely groundbreaking because whey in itself, a good quality whey protein is hell of an expensive. Where do you source your whey from? Is it local? Is it from Europe? Where do you find your whey protein?
So we've got two sources. I mean, you always try to hedge, in this kind of industry because some guys have got and some guys haven't got and that kind of thing. So we've got two sources. One is a German source and the other is an American company. Mostly comes from America, a crowd called Hilmar. Yes. Hilmar is sort of one of the world leaders in whey protein. I don't know if you know, there's a difference between normal whey protein and what they call, unfortunately, native whey protein. Normal whey is basically a byproduct of cheese manufacture because the curd becomes the cheese and they they used to chuck the whey, they used to feed the whey to pigs. And then there's what they call native whey protein, which is whey extracted purely for that purpose, not as a byproduct of cheese. So we used to bring out the native whey, but it was very, very expensive. So we've sort of gone back to whey, but we always worked mostly or almost exclusively with a form of whey called whey isolate. Mm-hmm. They eliminate via enzyme activity the lactose. Yes. So it's more digestible.
Yes.
People who are lactose intolerant, I wouldn't recommend they took whey isolate, but you would probably find less of a hassle.
I've been fighting with people who make whey protein powders for as long as I can remember because they blend so much else into, I'm not going to mention brand names, but I think you'll probably guess who I'm talking about. They blend milk powder and all sorts and kinds of other things into a powder, a nutritional product that is masquerading as whey, can label it as whey, but there's so much other junk in there. And it is absolutely my mission to get my clients at least and as many people as I can possibly get to understand the difference. So let's just go back to what you were saying about the whey protein isolate and you know the cost and where you source it from.
So yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, the protein market, the whey market especially, was developed around the muscle market and a bodybuilding sort of business emerged around it, and a very big one. I think it's on the wane, to be quite honest. I don't think the muscle market is anywhere near as buoyant as it used to be.
I agree.
And when we started to move into the protein market generally, I started about 10 years ago, we kind of made a virtue out of less is more. So I introduced, we started with a product called Raw Vegan Protein, which was at the time there was nothing available for the vegan market, and that's basically a whole grain brown rice protein powder, nothing added. And then we added pea protein, nothing added. Pea and hemp protein, nothing added. Whey protein, nothing added. So we built a little slogan around our brand, Life Matrix, which we call ourselves the clean protein people.
Yes.
Versus the rest, which are typically, you know, I wouldn't say they call them dirty in the sense that their products are grubby, but just that they often just fortify with crazy things in order to try and differentiate themselves from a marketing point of view. And we've never really focused on that muscle market at all. It's never been, although I see that we are increasingly picking up some of those people who want to move to a cleaner protein story. Our proteins have been focused on women because I believe that women tend to be low, you know, their protein content of their diet is relatively low. You don't see women.
Yeah, I find a lot, especially with women perimenopause, postmenopause, when we increase their protein to even just adequate, not even my opinion of how much protein we should be eating, the body fat or the body composition changes dramatically. And if only more women realize that muscle doesn't make you big, fat makes you big. And the more good quality, clean protein you eat, the healthier you're going to be. Your brain is going to be much healthier. Your body's going to be much healthier. You will avoid osteoporosis in many cases because you'll have a musculature that supports your skeletal structure. So I'm really fascinated that, you know, you had women in mind when you created these proteins. And what I enjoy about your packaging is it isn't that scary black and red, almost meaty looking bodybuilder type packaging, which is so much more appealing to women, because women don't want to look like bodybuilders unless you're in that industry.
That's a very deliberate strategy of ours, is to soften the edges of the protein sort of story, if I can put it that way, to make it more appealing to women. And yes, I think you're absolutely right. I know you're right. There's a challenge of getting women to adequately get their protein levels up to adequate levels.
Yes.
And supplementation is an easy way to do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, a smoothie in the morning that's got 20 grams of whey isolate is an easy way to pull up those levels.
Yeah. I know from personal experience, if I want to drop 100 grams of fat a day, I just need to get in 30 grams of protein 3 to 4 times a day. And that immediately equates to 100 grams of fat loss. And if more people tried it, you've got nothing to lose. You've only got fat to lose and health to gain. They would be amazed how simple it is by just incorporating these things. Yeah, I've also looked at your other powders, the moringa powder, the raw broccoli powder. And making a smoothie out of, say, just the whey powder, some colostrum, and broccoli and some moringa. You've got a superfood there that is pretty much unparalleled to anything else. It's quite incredible if you just get a bit creative, what you can do with a couple of these things.
Look, I'm a big fan of the smoothie sort of revolution. It just makes sense. It's breakfast. I know that the jury's out on breakfast, and there are very different views on whether breakfast is important or not, particularly in this sort of era of intermittent fasting.
Sure.
If you can delay your breakfast, you're probably doing yourself a favor. But I just find personally that I make up these remarkably complicated concoctions because I'm fortunate to have all the ingredients.
Yes.
And it all goes into the morning smoothie. And
so what does your morning smoothie consist of?
Well, it changes, as you can imagine, because I'm spoiled. My factory is like a toy box of ingredients. So if I look, if I was to, what's in today's smoothie, the tub at the moment is tonic mushrooms. I'm using a wellness blend of tonic mushrooms, which is shiitake and I think it's black hoof and bamboo fungus. I've got vegetarian protein in. I'm using the raw vegan at the moment. I'm also using a product that we haven't launched called Avena Sativa. I don't know if you've come across it. It's wild oat.
Yeah.
So Avena Sativa is a really interesting product. We haven't launched it, but I'm playing around with it at the moment. Then I use MCT powder. I also add MCT oils often because I think getting that energy kickstart without carbs is a good thing. Then I'll chuck in all sorts of bits and pieces. We do a thing called tropical fiber, which is a mix of three different fibers. I'm a big fan of Lugol's iodine. Throw that in as well. It's particularly now in the COVID kind of environment.
Yes.
Lugol's kills all known pathogens. Nobody can patent it. It was the original antibiotic, and it's remarkable stuff. I like to take Lugol's on a daily basis. It's something that's and it's cheap. You know, I mean, a lot of these ingredients are actually quite cheap.
Yes.
You don't have to spend large amounts of money on these products. So yeah, I mix and match lots of different ingredients all the time and play around with them. Try and make a nutrient-dense smoothie. And it works. I mean, it's satiating, keeps you going till lunchtime easily without having to snack away. And at least you kind of get the maybe it's a false sense of security, but you kind of get the feeling that, well, I've whacked my body with some good stuff this morning.
You know, I mean, I know the jury's out on breakfast since the keto evolution and bulletproof diet became a big deal, but it's not for everybody. And I certainly don't believe it's right for children. I believe that kids need a superfood smoothie at least in the morning. It's certainly going to do them a lot better than a cereal. And not everybody's happy to exist on bulletproof coffee or fast up until 12 o'clock. And it's not for everybody. So I think, you know, my message is this is by individual. You've got to figure out what works for you. Powders, especially if you're traveling, to mix a whole lot of superfoods together and have that as a fail safe if you travel a lot, I think it's brilliant. You know, it solves a lot of problems.
It's easy. That's a big thing too. And I mean, I don't feel like a smoothie at lunchtime, but I'm happy to have one in the morning.
Let's chat quickly about the medicinal mushrooms, because this is almost like nutrition's best kept secret, but it's been around for thousands of years, but it's only I think since Four Sigmatic went on a big marketing spree became common knowledge again. I personally use chaga, lion's mane. I've been using them for years, and I can honestly say that without them I don't think I could think straight. So when did you bring in your medicinal mushroom line, and what prompted that?
Okay, so this is also brand new. It's just interesting that all these things sort of come together at the same time. But we've only just launched it. I met a group of people up in the Magaliesberg who were specializing in growing mushrooms,
right,
and who seem to have a lot of knowledge about them. So I could take some of the ideas that I'd seen internationally and try and develop some local blends. I didn't want to go into the singulars. I thought it would be easier to work on a blend basis, so you can mix a couple of mushrooms together. And we've created three blends: a sort of vitality blend, what we call a well-being blend, an anti-aging blend, well-being, anti-aging, and energizing.
Okay.
And they all blend. Oyster mushroom is the basis. It's quite interesting is that oyster mushrooms, you know, you can buy in the supermarket. But the research on oyster mushrooms in terms of its medicinal properties, it's just fantastic. So even though it looks like a, you know, the common garden commodity thing, it's actually a really, really powerful product. And then again, chaga, shiitake, we add into lion's mane, we use in one of the blends. Black hoof.
Okay.
The other one is called snow fungus, and another one is called bamboo fungus. So these tonic mushrooms are really fungi, you know what I mean, to a large extent. They're the ones that grow off trees rather than grow as mushrooms on the ground. And by blending them up into these nice combinations, they make a really nice hot drink. Again, yes, it's an easy way to take it. You could have these as soups, or you could add them as soups or as hot teas and that kind of thing. So I quite like it. I mean, I'm a big fan of powders, I must say. They're just very, very versatile.
Well, yeah, it's a great delivery method, especially if aren't getting in what they need in a day. It's super efficient. And blends are definitely the way to go. Otherwise, you're going to spend so much money on singular products. And I've experimented with nootropics for years. And the blends, I've just come down to a blend because it gives you what you need and you don't have to get funny about it or spend a fortune.
Yeah, and also you don't sit then with a product that just doesn't get used. Doing these in 100-gram packs, so they're not big. You know, that's roughly a month's supply.
Yeah, you don't need a hell of a lot in a dosage either to add that to your smoothie. Yeah,
five to 10 grams of mushroom powder is a lot of mushroom.
Yeah, you only need a bit. And then MCT oil, that is something that nobody knew much about until the keto revolution really emerged. What is the difference between, you know, everyone makes claims, Dave Asprey makes claims that he's bulletproof, MCT oil is better than any other. What is the difference between MCT oils?
Well, I mean, he's right to a point. I mean, but basically MCT oil is really, let's take coconut oil for example. What they do is it's a process called fractionation. So please don't assume that this is, and then this is something one has to get used to in this industry. There are some very healthy products that are not necessarily natural. And fractionation is a process where they separate out the fatty acids, and that separation in the case of say coconut oil is the removal of lauric acid, mm-hmm. which is really the stuff you find in mother's milk, mm-hmm. And you get left with two medium chain fats. One is called capric acid and one is called caprylic acid, C8 and C10. You often see, and the typical MCT oil is a 60-40 blend of C8 and C10. These are the medium chain fats that the body uses just for energy. They have no nutritional value whatsoever. It's purely as a source of energy because the body can use those to produce ketones, which are an alternative to sugar. So MCTs are really just a fat-based source of energy. You can source them out of palm kernel oil. You can source them out of coconut oil. And then you can also, and interestingly enough, goat's milk is very high in these MCTs.
That's interesting.
And that's why when you talk about goats, I think there's a term they use. It's caprine. It's a caprine as an animal. And that references capric acid and capric acid. So you can see it's interesting how they connected the two together. It's about the fat content of goat's milk that defines it. So goat's milk is actually a good source of medium chain fats. And Asprey is right in the sense that he goes out and he has a formulation made for him. And we've brought it out ourselves. It's much more expensive. The ratio between C8 and C10 is pushed much more in favor of C8. It comes like an 80-20 ratio, not a 60-40 ratio. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's the reason
That seems to be the main difference. So, there's available in the market, and we've tried to bring it in now, and we'll try and bring it in. Okay, so you could use an organic coconut oil because we sell coconut oil-based MCTs as well as palm kernel-based MCTs. Mm-hmm. If you're very concerned about rainforest issues and that, then you probably opt for the coconut-based mm-hmm. one. But we do the palm kernel oil that we do get our MCTs from belongs to there's a rainforest protection group that unites quite a big part of the industry. So it's not as though, you know, this is the rape and pillage of the rainforest so you can have free ketogenic energy. But the coconut one, I think actually I find a little bit more effective, I'll be honest. I'm not sure why, because at the end of the day, it's just the MCT molecules that matter. It doesn't matter what the source is. But yeah, so that's typically the difference. Yeah, we've then also done some flavors to make them more interesting, particularly around bulletproof coffee. So you can buy a vanilla MCT oil, which is really nice if you like bulletproof coffee because it gives a lovely vanilla. And then we also do an MCT powder, which is quite nice for smoothies as well if you don't like the taste of oil, because you know, there's a lot of people, men especially, I know. I've been in the nutritional oil business for long enough to know that men are a lost cause when it comes to drinking oil. They are such ninnies. Women are stoic about this kind of thing. They'll take their omegas.
I don't know. That hemp oil, I cannot get my head around. It's just that it's flavor lives with
you. You know, these oils emulsify really well in smoothies.
Yes.
Again, a great way to get high quality omegas into your body at dosage. Now, if you want to take a dosage of flaxseed oil, for example, a really good dosage is a tablespoon. Now, you try and drink a tablespoon of oil. It's not easy. I mean, it's no fun. But if you put it into a smoothie, it emulsifies really, really well, especially with dairy.
Yes.
And you hardly notice the taste. So it's a really good way of getting omegas.
So, yeah, the MCT oil, what I found as well with people who have very sensitive guts, colitis, they can't tolerate the oils very well, but the powders they can tolerate. So you can still get those exogenous ketones in via the powder without any gut irritation. So that works incredibly well also.
But also, there's a lesson out of MCTs, and that is you start small. Because if you haven't taken MCTs before and you take a tablespoon, you will get terrible stomach cramps. You know what I mean? It does.
Just
it
the power you straight out. Through. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just very strong. And remember that, it's the liver has to metabolize the stuff. So if your liver is not in great condition, all lipids, all fats are a problem in terms of digestion.
Okay.
If your gallbladder ain't functioning perfectly, which has got to emulsify the fats.
Absolutely.
So it's always good to start small. Start with a teaspoon.
Yes.
And slowly build up.
Well, Bruce, this has been the most fascinating talk. I could talk to you for about 3 hours, but I'm not going to keep you any longer. Perhaps we can chat again. I'd love to put some of your smoothie recipes up on my website. I've got a recipe website, which I'd absolutely love to get all these wonderful breakfast smoothie concoctions up there so people can start experimenting and playing with getting that nutrition in the morning. So, yes, I think this is a lot of info for people to take in and start experimenting with medicinal mushrooms. Definitely the camel milk when that comes through. I can't wait to give that a bash. And
yeah, it'll take a lot at the moment, but that's okay. It'll trickle through to the health stores over the next month or two. But just before you go, I just thought because it's so topical at the moment, the Institute of Functional Medicine, which is quite a well-known outfit in the States, it's not a non-profit, but they bring together a lot of information and a lot of training for the health industry, for the medical industry around functional medicine, around natural medicine.
Mm-hmm.
They just produced a monograph this week on natural products that could be useful for COVID. Okay, mm-hmm. Not as a cure, but as preventative. All right, obviously in a preventative kind of environment. And all the usual suspects are there: the zinc, the vitamin C, the vitamin D, the vitamin A, and that kind of stuff. They're all referenced there with research links and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the first one they mentioned. And I just find this very interesting because it's something that comes up quite often, is quercetin. And that's something very few people seem to know about, even though it's the most abundant antioxidant in the body. And one of the best sources of quercetin, would you believe, is buckwheat. And if you roast buckwheat, which is really just buying buckwheat, we sell it, lots of people sell it, and you roast it up on a you take one of those cast iron skillets or frying pans, and just dry roast it there to get it nice, almost like a coffee bean, get it nice and roasty. And then you make a tea out of it. It's a tea that's used in Korea, Japan, all over the world, in Asia, in Russia as well. Because they make kasha out of it, which is a very famous fermented buckwheat drink. But if you want high dosage of antioxidant, which is the quercetin, which contains rutin, what you often find in oranges and that, but in small quantity, buckwheat tea looks like a very, very interesting COVID drink, hot drink.
Okay, I will look into that. Thank you so much. This has been my favorite topic, obviously.
Oh, great.
And then we can
thank you. It's been interesting chatting. Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you so much, and we'll chat again soon.
This episode has been sponsored by Jackson's Whole Food Market. If you would like to win a hamper full of delicious, healthy products, please go to the link in the show notes, which can be found at reinventhealth.co.za/podcast notes. Include your name and loyalty card number and stand a chance to win.